Okay, so that is literally inaccurate reporting.
Correct.
Well, we can.
That is literally not what is happening. So everybody understands. It's not about.
Can we not use the word wet signature? By the way, I don't know why that bothered me. It really did. If we could never say wet signature again, I'd be happy. Right? Am I right?
I did not have the reaction that you had to it. I'm sorry. I didn't have. Oh my gosh, that was so okay.
Welcome to Rivera and Rees, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends. Welcome back for another episode of Rivera and Rees. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Rachel? Rachel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I kind of played hooky yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
And you say it like, do you disapprove that I played hooky?
No, I just mean you and I picked the worst times ever to live a life. And then when we do, when we announce it, when we say we're not going to be around, we're going to do some stuff, that's when... You know what? It's the fan.
Yeah, stuff happens. Well, yesterday, my husband, he's like, because he, you know, he works from home, but his fellow coworkers, his boss, whoever, they're also on vacation.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's actually kind of quiet right now. They're gone. I've caught up on a lot of stuff. You want to go for a hike and go visit some falls?
Yeah, sounds good.
And well, my initial, because I'm a work addict, my knee-jerk reaction was to go, do I have time? But
yeah,
I said yes, and we went, and it was fabulous. We took our dog, our Labrador, with us, Hank. We played fetch in the water. There was like hardly any people there because it's the middle of the week and people have jobs, and you know,
and it's hot. It's hot.
And it was yeah, but I mean, I'm in Tennessee and river water. I'm not I sweat my tail off when we did our 3 mile hike, but then at the end of it, you know, we got into water, so no big deal. Nobody can see me, but I have bedhead really bad, and I'm just like distracted by myself.
6:40 in the morning. So
well, then Rachel, so I mentioned that because I played hooky yesterday. We're a little kind of winging it today because of that, and also the fact that Rachel lost her power last night. So yeah, she slept without a fan.
Yeah. Which, you guys, you know, if you are a listener from the beginning, I have only a few things I really feel like I need in this world. And a fan is one of them at almost all times. Something like a fan needs to be circulating around me. And so the second that power goes out, that is literally the first thing I think of. Not all the meat in our freezers. Not am I going to, you know, not be able to see where I'm walking at night. No, just how am I going to sleep without a breeze blowing on me? And I'm going to tell you, it was rough because it is hotter than Hades right now in Virginia. And yeah, and you know what? I realized my baby doesn't like to sleep without a fan on either.
She is her daughter.
She was dead tired. I go to put her in her crib. She's like, no. Starts freaking out. And so she also slept next to me in the heat without a fan. So it was double hot, double
sweaty.
Did
you get my text message where I sent my little video of me turning on
my fan?
I got
it this morning once my power came on, and I thought that was really rude. She sent me a video of her turning on her fancy pants fan, which, by the way, is really fancy. Like, I'm not rolling like Dyson style fans. I'm talking rickety old fan that you had in your house in the 80s that like turns side to side and is one button. Okay. We're not getting fancy. And she sent me a video. I mean, it's rude. She sent me a video. Rude.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got that off your chest. Your face.
I did.
Too.
Thank you. I feel better. I feel better.
This is how I express love and affection. I like torture people.
Yeah.
But as I was on the way to the trail, and you know, the announcement was yesterday the president had, I believe it was the Crown Prince of Bahrain coming to visit, and he had an Oval Office meeting with him. But before that happened, he also dropped, like, I hate, look, here's the deal. We really do not want to make this Epstein thing like our new personality.
Right.
But this president, who is,
he's making it part, his personality.
Well, and he's, I'm a little surprised because this is usually a very message media savvy, mm-hmm. or has been, administration so far. Yes, they've had some flubs and stuff, but for the most part, they've been like in tune. And I'm very perplexed as to what we're trying to do here or what he's attempting to do here. And I mean that sincerely. I'm not, and I'm really trying to make sure that I don't, because you know me, I don't like to, I'm conspiracy theorist reluctant unless I have pretty firm evidence to come to certain conclusions. And I also don't want to think the worst of people right off the bat either. So I'm always looking for a middle ground possibility that I think makes more sense, right? So yeah. Trump posts, as I am hitting the trailhead, and I'm like, I'm gonna tap out for the day. I'm gonna try to tap out for the day. He drops this truth post that literally goes off.
Yeah.
Like, it's a mini dissertation and a rant. Uh-huh. And I was really surprised by it, frankly. Not just that he would react this way, but it seems like every time he's responded, it's kind of escalating his previous response.
I mean, that's exactly what he's doing. I don't, and I don't understand it. And here's the deal. He doesn't, so say there is stuff we don't know. Okay. Say we engage in a conspiratorial, you know, take on this, and there is stuff we don't know, and there is stuff that he needs to keep hidden, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Even if that's the case, like the messaging is bad no matter what. Like, you would think that someone in his office would tell him, hey, do you want to know what is going to make people think that there's a conspiracy here? Responding like this. And he's like, okay, great. I'll do that. The messaging would be great if he would back off and let people ask questions and just like let people have concerns. Instead, he's like throwing gasoline on the fire by really like incendiary, hostile rhetoric. Not rhetoric, insults. So I don't know who's there telling him this is good or working or even appropriate.
Well, I'm not going to read the entire post for you guys.
No, 'cause it would take you 10 minutes. I mean, jeez. Do you want to know what? I made a reel last night to go on Instagram about this because I was so put off by this rant he went on. And I did read the entire thing. Unfortunately, and it was so long with that in my commentary that Instagram wouldn't let me upload it. It just crashed.
Yeah, it can't be more than
I stayed like under the 5 minutes, but it was like, this is over 3 minutes, so we're not going to recommend it to new followers. And also, we're going to crash and just delete it. They were like, no, it's just too loud.
Well,
too
he loud, did
end too up mean, too long.
He did end up doing his meeting in the Oval Office with the Crown Prince of Bahrain, and he was asked about this. And so there is a audio version of this post, so you guys can get the gist of what he had to say in the post.
I know you want to move past all this intrigue over the Epstein files, but I do want to ask you to clarify something you said this morning. You said this was all a hoax. Has your attorney general told you this was a hoax? What evidence have you seen?
No, it's not the attorney general. No, I know it's a hoax. It's started by Democrats. It's been run by the Democrats for 4 years. You had Christopher Wray and these characters and Comey before him. And it's a bad group. It started, actually, look at the Steele dossier. That turned out to be a total hoax. The 51 agents, the intelligence, so-called intelligence agents, it was a hoax. It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats. And some stupid Republicans and foolish Republicans fall into the net. And so they try and do the Democrats' work. The Democrats are good for nothing other than these hoaxes. They're bad for policy. They're bad for picking candidates that can get elected. Like in New York, we have a communist running. He may get elected, too, actually, but he'll destroy the city. I call it the Epstein hoax. It takes a lot of time and effort. Instead of talking about the great achievements we've had, a great gentleman Yesterday, as you know, went on CNBC and he made the statement that Trump may go down as the greatest president.
Okay, now he goes into talking about what people have said about him and the work he's done so far.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Well, my thought
I have thoughts.
My thought is if it was a hoax and on par with the Steele dossier and Russia, 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 why weren't you saying that for the last 4 years? Why haven't you been calling it a hoax all this time? And why would you have lent it any credence or let anybody that you were bringing into your administration talk about it with any importance? Like, it's not like it just showed up like in the last month. This has been an ongoing issue. It's been something that's been talked about. And yeah, we discussed that Trump was a little bit different in his response about like the Epstein files than he was about JFK and MLK. Fine. But he still talked about it. And so did members of his staff, his administration. And not just like flippantly, like they talked about how serious it was, how egregious it was. A woman went to federal prison for this, her involvement in this. There's been multiple people who've said that they have seen the lists, the implicated people in high positions.
They haven't said, well, I don't know. What do you mean? I think what's happening here is that we have, or could be happening, let me just put it this way, is that it's like poor communication or people making assumptions because of terms that we use and things that we say. Like, for example, the list, I have now seen two interviews of Alan Dershowitz, who represented Epstein, and at one point was implicated by Virginia Dufresne, and Virginia then retracted those statements, that there is no list like everybody think. Like, the black book that was released, I guess, would be the equivalent of the list. But what he has seen are like affidavits, statements, and things that have been put under seal by judges. So the administration themselves cannot, and they've been redacted, because they have names on them. Now, Alan Dershowitz suggests that from what he has seen, that nobody who is currently in office is on the list.
Yeah.
In the records. But the records are under seal because of these judges. So the administration is kind of has their hands tied because there's some of this information that they cannot release. Mm-hmm. So, and I've seen now multiple times, and I've actually seen it between not just now, but in the past, that the list per se, the client list, isn't what people think it is.
Is the government hiding a client list or anything that the Trump administration could release tonight?
No, there is no client list. There never has been a client list. A client list suggests that Jeffrey Epstein made a list of people to whom he trafficked women. What there is a redacted FBI affidavit from accusers. There are several of them. From accusers that accuse Jeffrey, that accuse various people of having improper sex. And that has been redacted. The names of the people accused have been blacked out. Now, of course, because I was the lawyer and I did only investigations, I know who all these people are. I could figure out, based on everything that I saw, who Mr. X is, Mr. Y is, and Mr. Z. I can tell you right now, none of them are public figures who are currently in office. Some of them were previously in office. Some of them are dead. But there is no client list. And the redactions could be undone if you go to court. So many of the things that are being suppressed by two judges in Manhattan. And they're doing it largely to protect the alleged accusers, who are, in the view of the judges, victims, even though we don't know what their actual status is. But the judges have issued orders, which is why I can't disclose things I'd love to disclose, saying that you can't disclose this information. But Pam Bondi and the Justice Department and Donald Trump are not responsible for that. I don't know of any information that they could disclose that they haven't disclosed. Now, maybe there is some, but I'm simply not aware of it. And so I think it's important to place the blame where the blame deserves to be placed. The vast majority of people who are in the files, and I know them all, I've seen all the names, the vast, vast majority of them have already been disclosed. They're in articles all over the world. They're in books that have been written. So if we got everything, you would be shocked how few names are there that haven't already been disclosed. The media hasn't, by the way, done a good enough job in finding the people who have been disclosed in the public record. So that's that list.
That's fine. I still stand by everything I said. Just change the word list to
no,
files.
But I mean, my you other thing is that I'm looking at what... So I saw Trump do an interview with Mark Halperin before he entered office back in 2016, where Halperin was asking him about Epstein because it was 2015. It was back in the news. And Trump did say, yeah, we need to like release it. We need to put it out there. He wasn't in office at that time. Mm-hmm. I do know, or it does seem to me that he did get quiet about it. And even when he was running this last time, he wasn't running. Even when he was asked about Epstein itself, he would always give this caveat. And it's different from what, honestly, I'm more curious about Pam Bondi, but it's different from what Kash Patel and Dan Bongino were doing. Because, yeah, they were saying it. It was part. There were personalities. There were commentary. They didn't have any additional information. And Trump bringing them into office, I don't think it was on those things alone. If anything, I think it was more about, you know, the Russian collusion and everything else that happened because Kash Patel investigated that with David Nunes at the time that he was in office. Right. So I think that was more of a motivator than anything. And then the other thing is that a lot of people are saying, well, what's a hoax?
Right.
Because they're like, are you saying that Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison and she didn't do anything wrong, or that Epstein never did anything wrong? And I don't think that's the case at all. Obviously, there's victims, there's testimony, there's, you know, evidence. So I don't think.
Right. The problem is, I think that what some people feel like myself, who are not invested in the Epstein files necessarily, I haven't been following it for the past 10 years like some people. It's less about the actual content, which I think is obviously, because I'm a human, disgusting and sad and horrible for the victims of, you know, Maxwell, Epstein, and all these other people who are involved, whoever they are. And it's more about what they're doing right now. And to just act like,
oh, he's being whole petty.
Well, and it's not just that. It's someone is lying. And that's the problem is, I mean, you have Speaker Johnson now coming out like, hey, Bondi, you need to get it together and release something. You had Bondi and what's her name? Come on. The other one, the other gal. Oh, it'll come to me. You know, saying there's hundreds of videos of, you know, child pornography. There's all these different victims so that are implicated. I've seen it. It's horrible. There's names of people. There's flight logs. There's all this stuff. And then just doing an about face like there's no they're there. And you have Trump all of a sudden acting like asking for some level of transparency. Obviously, the government's not going to tell us everything. They don't. And sometimes they can't. For reasons we'll never understand, but I don't think that it is naive for Americans to go, wait, so all of a sudden you're telling us that we're weaklings for asking questions when you have, I mean, a very confused administration right now. It looks like a lot of people that you're talking to or not talking to every day are not all on the same page. They don't know what they're all talking about. They're all saying different things. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, yes, that does make sense. And I think part of it, this is not surprising from Trump, because I think a good chunk of it is that he's just annoyed that this is distracting from the high of the last 2 weeks that he's done.
Well, the last 6 months have been winning in his mind and in the GOP's mind. And now all of a sudden he hit a road bump and the administration really screwed up. They're not handling this well at all. And it's not even like they're not handling it well. they're lying. Someone's lying. And that's
but lying about what? That's my question.
That's the problem. It's like when you have an administration that's all supposed to be working in tandem and working together on a project and they're all saying different things, someone's not telling the truth.
Well,
it's not
yeah.
like, oh, we all are seeing it differently. No, they're literally saying contradictory statements. So
but
I was lying.
Let me ask this.
Yeah.
And I'm not, don't get annoyed with me because I'm not running. I'm literally trying to, you know, just work this out. So was somebody lying? I'm just saying possibly. Was somebody lying or being, I don't want to say hyperbolic, but just kind of got ahead of themselves beforehand? And I'm specifically talking about Bondi,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the way that she has annoyed me from the get-go because she comes in hot and uses a lot of the way she speaks as an AG
yes.
with frivolity and kind of just all of this extra, which is not the way an attorney general should speak,
yeah.
almost where she's trying to, and I've mentioned this before, she's yeah. trying to perform for the network television audience.
Yes.
And knowing that the Epstein, you know, maybe taking the lead of what Kash Patel and Dan Bongino were doing before mm-hmm. they came into the office. Because
yeah.
before all this popped off, Kash Patel and Bongino sat down for an interview and tried to be very honest and say, look, Epstein killed himself. Like, uh-huh. We have no evidence that says or that proves that he did not commit suicide or that he uh-huh. committed – no, sorry – that he was killed and that he did commit suicide. I'm always getting yeah. that backwards. So their messaging was consistent and Bondi's out there going with all of this extra verbiage instead of being mm-hmm. very precise and concise with her language. Trump, of course, is always doing that. And so you have yeah. to figure out where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is where Trump's like, okay, well, if there's nothing there, you know, we need to move on from this because it's distracting from what the work that we actually need to do. And that's where the sudden messaging change happens. And Bondi, like a chicken, goes hiding in, you know, I don't know. Suddenly she's not on TV. She was on TV all the time.
Right.
And now suddenly she's not on TV.
Well, so that's I get what you're asking. Yeah, sure, she could have gotten ahead of herself, but being hyperbolic and getting ahead of yourself is a lot different than making actual claims of what you saw and telling the American people there was this, this, and this, and then expecting them to not go, okay, well then, who are those names? Where are they going? And how are they involved?
But she
with
still
all of this
didn't
material?
Do that.
She went on Fox News and said that.
No, she went on Fox News and she said, so he... Well, the client, because they asked about the client list. And again, that's why I'm saying is like, my question is, mm-hmm. was she still playing to the television where it's like, do you say that you have a client list? And she's like, well, it's,
she said,
you know,
she said there was
on
over 250 victims.
Correct. But she's okay. not, again, she's never provided a list of like, she's never insinuated uh-huh. that. I'm not going to say she's not – I think that's a fair statement. But she – you know, maybe she's insinuated, but she's never clearly stated. And all of these other men or women were involved and they knew about it. She said that there was victims. The memo itself said that there was 1,000 victims. You know, when she said tens of thousands, she later, you know, clarified, which I mentioned this, that it could have just been child pornography that he downloaded. You hear stories all
yeah,
the time
I know. Yeah.
of criminals where they have tens of thousands of files of child yeah. pornography. And so, again, and this is me trying to figure out what is the extent of the lie?
I don't know.
And that's the problem, is the messaging here. But, you know, I still, for me personally, I still question that it's to the point where some people will imagine this to be. And some people, like there are individuals, especially this is why I don't like conspiracies, is that you can get yourself, you can be convinced of something looks a certain way. And that mm-hmm. until you get that, you're not going to be pleased with the information that you're given. You're always going to believe that something isn't given to you.
Yeah,
there's
I
no
get that.
Question
That's
that the administration is yeah. managing this poorly.
Where I'm at, this for me, it's more about the treatment of ordinary voters and handling it so poorly and then expecting everybody to just be like, okay, that's fine. take an L on it, but whatever. And the case that she is that hyperbolic and she was willing to come on, and it wasn't just her. It was, what is that other girl's name? Dang it.
I really have no idea who.
In the administration, and she was standing.
Oh, Elba. You're talking about.
And she kind of.
She's another one.
It doesn't matter, though. She's within the administration, so fine. If she is, if her and Bondi are there and going, there's hundreds of this and this and this, and I've seen it, it's disgusting, and we're going to disclose it, blah, blah, blah. And they say it more than once. And then they trot out a bunch of influencers, hand them a binder, trying to make it a big deal. Then they need to be fired. This is what I'm saying. It's less about me thinking that there's a list of, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was a list, files, I don't care, however you want to categorize it. If there's evidence that there were tons of, or even 5, 10, I don't care. Just say there was people of high position implicated in this, but for national security reasons, we cannot tell you.
I wish they would just do that.
Okay. Yes. But they're not. And they're consistently not saying things, and they're all saying different things. And you've got, like I said, Speaker Johnson coming out and going, yeah, they need to be more transparent. You've got Bondi, who's showing up at press conferences all nervous and like shaking because she really knows how badly she's screwed this up. Then you've got Trump telling his supporters, I don't want you to vote for any of us anymore. You're all weaklings and you swallow.
Yeah, he's being, there's no question.
It's
I'm making no defense whatsoever of what Trump has said in the last 24 hours. Like, I think there's no question that this is, it makes no sense. It's out of pocket on this subject. And it's really unfortunate because there are other things that are going so well that, yes, I honestly wish you would handle this situation better because there are more important things that we need to focus on, and how you're handling it is a problem. Yeah. And what I did think was interesting, this is another one that I saw. So there was also been a discussion or a debate on whether or not this is an online thing or if this is like a normie thing. Especially when we're talking about people that are in blue states, in the blue wall, or that could possibly easily flip to the Democrats. So there is a journalist, I forget her first name, her last name is Zito. And she actually has a book out right now because she was in Butler, Pennsylvania for during the rally where on the attempted assassination of the president. And she was, I believe she was there for the, she reports with the Washington Examiner. She's also done some pieces with, you know, even the Washington Post and the Atlantic. And she was on Bret Baier on a panel and she was asked a specific question. And her beat, her focus is she's in Pennsylvania. Her entire, like she grew up there, her entire personality and who she reports for are the people in Pennsylvania, and she also has a really good finger on the pulse of what these voters want, and she actually pegged them to be switching over to Trump well before anybody else in that region. So I'm going to go ahead and let me play that for you.
Keeps bubbling up, Selena. It's going to be a problem.
It is, but then it isn't. So I live in Western Pennsylvania, literally the heart of the Trump coalition. And I was very curious to see how people were, you know, reacting to this. Was it the same as what I see on social media? And it, well, I went to a rodeo. I mean, you can't get more like centralized.
Down home. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I couldn't find, I interviewed several dozen people. I couldn't find one person who was, you know, completely outraged at all. I mean, yes, people want to know if there's a there, but it's not driving what's important to them.
Well, and that's the thing. She's exactly right. I want to read her book, by the way.
She's a great journalist. Like, I love her stuff. Yeah.
That's the whole point. I do think a lot of it is like the online group. But the more he does, the more the White House specifically and someone doesn't get in his ear and tell him to stop talking the way he's talking and tell his administration to get it together, get in a room and decide where we're at on this. The more they go down that road, the more it will become an issue for people who aren't online. The more it has intrigued people who are not online because they're going, why the heck is he popping off and calling us a weakling for thinking about this? I don't care that much, but I kind of care because I'm a compassionate person and I think people should be brought to justice, but why is he getting so angry? And that's the problem. His messaging is not going to stay online if he keeps treating people poorly, you know? And so, and like, basically, this is the first time I heard someone else say that who does not care about this issue. They were like, I don't know much about it, but I'll tell you what, when he got mad the other day at reporters for asking questions, that was the first time I've seen him get mad about something. And she's like, I thought that was weird. I was like, I know. So the longer they kind of don't give the American public anything to work with, and the more the American public feel they're being lied to, whether they are or not, that's not my issue as much as they're going to do some damage if they keep going down this road. And I don't know who's telling Lara Trump to come out and say, we're going to drop some more Epstein stuff. And then that doesn't happen. And then Trump says yesterday he might get a special prosecutor to look in, or a special.
Yes.
To look into it. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Why? You have an AG. They're supposed to be looking into it. You have the DOJ and the FBI.
Well, I mean, the reason you do that is because it's supposed to be someone who's independent and isn't going to be trying to, like.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Cover someone in the I mean, we've seen that not happen, but I'm just saying that that's supposed to be the concept of it.
I just love that we were not going to make this our entire personality we've been talking
and
about.
And now we're,
you want to know a weird tidbit? I mean, this is kind of like adjacent, since this is kind of a all over the place episode. You know, like the really popular textbook company, McGraw-Hill, like they made all of our textbooks.
Yeah, they made all the textbooks.
Did you know that it was partially owned by Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father?
Yeah, but partially owned how?
Well, McGraw-Hill like, formed a partnership with him, and it was the second largest textbook publisher in the United States for quite a while.
Okay, and the reason I ask partially is like when you ever have these companies, it's like partially owned as in like they had a board seat, or partially owned as in like they helped start it up. Okay.
No, it was a joint partnership. So Harold McGraw and Robert Maxwell, second largest.
Actually, speaking of.
My daughter just bought some textbooks from them yesterday. So I was like,
that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Speaking of education, which I don't have notes for this, but I know you've been following it.
Yeah.
The NEA recently.
Yes.
Held their like annual
yearly
convention
summit
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the NEA is the National Educators Association. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Education Association. Yes. Yes.
Our Education Association. And it's a
largest teachers union in the country.
Now, is this the same one as your best friend Weingarten heads up?
No, yeah,
She heads up the other one. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
However, so they had their annual summit, and reports are that if you would expect a group of teachers to gather around.
She was ATF or AFT, sorry, American Federation.
I was like, ATF?
No, not that. Please, no. Please don't have her involved with that. No. AFT, American Federation of Teachers. There you go.
But if you were to expect for teachers to gather annually and discuss how to better educate our children who are performing at the lowest scores, I think, that we have historically had, you would think that would be the topic of their discussion.
Yeah.
And their focus. Because remember that we're always told that their priority is the children. Instead, all documentation that has come out from this meeting, agenda, what they were going to talk about, what they were going to focus on, has all been focused on activism, and not just activism, but specifically how to challenge the Trump administration.
Yeah, and they kept their paperwork, like all of their, you know, when you go to these things, I've been to them before, obviously, you get, you know, your folder of all the different, like, business items you're going to be talking about. And if you go to specific, you hear like different panels and stuff, you get your paperwork, take notes and everything like that. But they kept all of theirs private. Usually they would publish it either on their website or make it you know, available to the public. And this year they didn't, which I thought was really interesting. But
well, it leaked.
It got scooped. Yeah. Corey DeAngelis was sharing it on X. And some of the business items are very, like, very, I mean, they're, it's just very clear what they're doing here. Like, for instance, business item 59 was that the NEA defends birthright citizenship and opposes the attempt to revert to pre-civil rights movement, Jim Crow, legal concepts of states' rights in order to deny citizenship to the children of immigrants. And so, I mean, it's like, it's literally saying we will use existing media platforms to organize and join actions with other unions, communities, immigrants' rights, and civil rights organizations in opposition to the Trump administration. And then they put a price tag on it. They're saying this will cost an additional $34,000.
Is what your union dues are going to.
That's right.
And that is insane. Your and donations, this, union dues, get out. Correct. Get out.
Get all the way out. And NEA is, like I said, the largest labor union in the country. And they have over 2.8 million members. Okay. So 2.8 administrators, teachers, school counselors, all of those people are able to go to this. That's 2.8 million educators in our country. And so, like, just find out who is, find out if one of your teachers, your kids' teachers was there, is going. Because if so, they're imbibing this. Like, this is what, and it wasn't just about that issue. It was plenty of issues. There was issues about standing in opposition to the dismantling of the U.S. Department of Education. There was one about, they need to defend democracy against Trump's fascism. That's and they're going to charge $3,500 for that for new material sources. Wow. And it's very dramatic. Listen to this. The members and material resources of NEA must be committed to the defense of the democratic and educational conditions required by our hopes for a just society and the survival of civilization itself by stating the truth. They're on a crusade. They're on a crusade.
Oh my gosh.
And this is what's in your classroom. So there you go. And that was just three of the ones I chose to highlight on my Instagram page. There's more. So, yeah. That's great.
Well,
and then did you see the video of the president? Please, did you have that queued up?
I do not, but
oh my gosh.
Becky
Pringle is her name. And just type in a cursory search, Becky Pringle, NEA, and then you will hear the closing speech of the summit by the president of this organization.
Hold on a second.
It's literally like 10 seconds, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth
hold it. On. Let's go check that out. I think she might be loud.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Say the words. Say the words. Say them. Diversity. Say them out loud. Diversity. Say them again.
Equity and inclusion. It sounds like a sermon. Sounds like a sermon.
And this isn't the first time she's been unhinged. I saw another one that was recent as well of her just screaming, like just scream. So she is not in control of her emotions. She has a problem and should not be leading any organization, especially one that's supposed to be educating children. And people wonder why, like, half of our fourth graders in our country can't read. It's because they're talking about this stuff when they should be talking about math, geography, I don't know, civics, education.
No, because civics.
Well, that's true. That could really, never mind.
That would be indoctrination.
Yeah, right. It's just, it's a scene. And that woman is leading it. She's leading the charge.
Well, it's kind of funny with all of this going on. Like, there are some things that have happened recently for the administration that, I mean, depending on what side you're on, have been a positive. For example, the judge allowed them to go forward, and I think they've laid off, I think it's 1,300 or 1,400 at the Department of Education.
Great.
So that was one. Mm-hmm. The other one was, speaking of laying off, did you see the production of laying off of the State Department employees?
Yes. You guys, I'm sorry. I just think it is so interesting that grown adults would consent to being on camera walking out of their place of business crying with signs written in crayon about how sad they are that they've been laid off and that we're going to televise it and act like this doesn't happen all the time in America. People get laid off, but this is tantamount to, like, well, the ending of democracy, like the NEA thinks.
Well, and the entire – so the State Department is particularly interesting because I was looking at numbers, and under the Biden administration,
yep,
the State Department has – I think it's gone up like 20%. Like,
yeah.
At one point, I've read reports where the State Department had to take months because they really didn't have a full account of how many people – were employed at the State Department. Well, and so we're talking about, like, they went from 70,000 to now they're over 80,000. And then everyone who is freaking out about the firing of 1,300 State Department employees.
Right.
That's basically like maybe 1% of...
Well, and if anyone had the numbers, it would be you. Were there people, I'm assuming, who worked in the State Department or in the administration who were laid off from the Trump administration when Biden came in? Isn't that kind of normal when you have an administration turnover? Aren't there some people that are fired?
Well, I don't think the Biden administration really... The issue with the Biden administration was that they didn't lay anybody off. They blew it up.
But in past administrations, I'm saying when there's turnover...
Well, yeah, of course. I'm sure. I would have to research that. But one of the biggest talking points about, you know, a lot of people will commonly say, get yourself a federal job because you never, you know, be yeah, unemployed again.
I just thought it was so interesting. Why are you crying? Why are you walking out and hugging? It was like it was a, I don't know. It felt so bizarre.
Do you know what they were trying to make it look like, which this is, I don't know if this is like a fair comparison because I don't want to diminish the comparison I'm about to make. But you know how like you see these really inspirational videos of people that have finally finished their last round of chemo?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, or, ring the bell.
Or someone has passed away and they're donating, you know, they're with the family and they're going to donate yeah, their organs. And it's supposed to be yeah, like, you know, there's this line of people who are applauding them and yeah, sympathizing with them and yes, just very compassionate with them.
Yeah.
I felt like they were trying to do that. And
the ones I saw, it looked like they were soldiers getting off a plane coming back from combat. And I'm like,
that's a good one, too. It's
come on. Like, be an adult. I'm sorry. This to me is like the diminishing of the American adult. Like, it stinks if you lose your job. We all have at one point or another left a job we cared about or lost one. I would not be. They had a station with crayons and construction paper.
I didn't see the crayons.
You didn't?
No, I didn't see that. I saw the printer. I thought when you said with crayons, I thought you were being like hyperbolic and, you know,
no, there was a sign that like told them to fill out a letter or something for like a coworker or say your final goodbyes, tell them how much they mean to you. Like, I worked at a job for 10 years, loved it. And on my last day, I did not.
You didn't even get cake?
Of course. I mean, they were nice and everything like that, obviously. But I wasn't like walking around room to room crying. I don't know. I just feel like it was very dramatic.
It was a huge production. And also, it's a ridiculous production when you also think back of all of the people that lost their jobs during COVID.
Yes. Exactly. Huh. Interesting. No one was there taping them. No one was checking in if that was sad or
not. Well, I mean, they couldn't gather together because they would have spread COVID, remember?
Right. Killed their grandma. Yes.
So, but the other thing, too, that just recently passed was the defunding of PBS and NPR and USAID in the rescissions package. Everybody, you know, Catherine Mayer, she's doing the rounds trying to defend NPR. I saw this. I have to play this for you. This is actually really funny. So Catherine Mayer, who is the CEO of NPR, you know, we've played her before where I think it was Brandon Gillis like questioned her about past tweets where she's tweeted about white supremacy and all these sort of things. So on CNN, she's making a defense of the rural communities that would not have access to the news or entertainment or whatever culture. And also she goes and she claims that if NPR actually has bias reporting, please tell us those stories. Please tell us about that bias reporting so that we can fix it. And we want to hear that criticism, right? Mm-hmm. So I found a video of one of my favorites of Senator Kennedy reading off NPR headlines. And he's so funny.
A few examples of stories that NPR has published using taxpayer money. I'll just read the headlines. First headline, NPR News Service. Michael Avenatti, quote, a profile of the media savvy attorney. They love Michael Avenatti. Okay. You know where Michael Avenatti is today? He's in jail. You know why? He's a crook. But for a while, he was a media darling on NPR. Here's another headline from NPR. How racism became a marketing tool for country music. I kid you not. The American taxpayers are spending $500 million a year to pay a local station to buy content that says country music is racist. Here's another headline. Eating less beef is a climate solution. Eating less beef is a climate solution.
Hold on.
I don't have anything against vegetarians. I'm a semi-vegetarian myself. I eat beef, and beef and cows eat grass. So that makes me a semi-vegetarian. But that's my choice.
Oh my gosh, I just love him so much. He's so funny. But my mayor was very upset, obviously, because NPR is now looking like they're going to lose their funding. And the claim is that this is going to negatively impact primarily the rural communities who don't have, I guess, broadband and fiber optic internet in order to be able to, which I don't even think, like, I lived in Oklahoma for a time. And I worked in rural areas in Oklahoma, like literally out in the middle of a cattle ranch in the middle of nowhere. And this was over 10 years ago, I think, that I did that. We still had internet. Like, it wasn't broadband internet. It had to be satellite or something like that. But internet existed. And I really feel, I thought it was funny, too, from her making this, and this is a talking point from the Democrats, as if the rural communities have really been such a major concern for the Democrats historically.
God bless Representative Kennedy. I love him. Every time I see him on something, it is a joy. But yeah, I mean, I don't feel like we should be funding any of this. I don't feel like the government should be funding any, like, television station at all, ever, or radio station, ever. Like, I don't understand why it's even controversial. I don't feel like that our money should be going to that. And if people really, really love the content that these stations are putting out, then they should donate to them to keep them going, just like we do with everything else. We all have subscriptions to different things that we find valuable. I don't feel like the federal government, that's not the federal government's job. Like, this is why we have
no.
This is why we are spending out the wazoo, because we do stuff like this. We pay for disgruntled progressives to tell us to stop eating meat and stop listening to country music. Like, that's not what the government should be spending their money on.
I concur. I think what is, in addition to the frustration that the president has had in the last few weeks, is that this is the type of stuff that's kind of getting buried, because it's one of the things that people have actually requested or wanted for, or, you know, he would argue this is what you actually voted for. And,
you hear that when he's talking. He's like, we're still talking about this Epstein guy. We're not talking about how much we're winning. Like, he just really needs us to remember. He's basically like, stay on message, MAGA base. Stop talking about it.
Well, he's not doing a great job.
No, he's not.
No,
he's not.
Not at all. Also, before we wrap up, I wanted to mention, give an update on the, because we had talked about it last time, the Anthony Bernal, who is the enforcer, or was the commander, not the commander in chief, the, what do you call it? The chief of staff. Okay. Who is also the former chief of staff of Jill Biden, appeared yesterday behind closed doors to testify before the House Oversight Committee on the auto pen and, you know, Biden's cognitive decline. He pled the fifth. So he did the same thing as O'Connor did. He pled the fifth on literally everything. Let's share what Comer had to say.
You're going to see a lot of these executive orders and pardons end up in a court of law, because this whole process stinks to high heaven. It's not the way it's supposed to work. Joe Biden's already incriminated himself in that interview. These staffers have an opportunity to answer simple questions, and they're pleading the fifth. So we're going to keep pressing forward, and hopefully we'll get some answers soon. I think a lot of the pardons and executive orders are going to end up in court, and they're not doing anything in here in these depositions to make their case. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, what do you believe might be invalid because of the article?
I think so. Now, well, it's the question is, was Joe Biden, did he know what they were signing using his name? That's the question. It's not necessarily the auto pen. It's, did he know what he was authorizing? Did he actually authorize the use of the auto pen? When Joe Biden is in the White House and he's saying he authorized the use of the auto pen, well, why not just sign it there? It's one signature. It doesn't.
Now, I don't know if what Comer's saying is actually going to happen in regards to whether or not these pardons are going to end up in court.
Right.
I mean, one could hope,
but it's the U.S. government. So,
yeah. And I'm also not going to hold my breath. However, because Bernal had pled the fifth, another thing that Comer said, and even Byron Daniels, who was also there for that interview. Okay. And also Byron Donalds, who was also there for that interview, they're both bringing up the fact that when Bernal was asked specifically about whether or not Biden instructed other people, whether they were covering anything up, he pled the fifth. And they're saying that and kind of insinuating that this is justification now to bring Jill Biden in to testify.
Do it. They will let the kids skip school that day. I will.
It's not going to be public. It's going to be behind closed doors.
We'll get something. Do it.
But what's been very interesting to me also was that the media, as in the Democrat, the Democrat establishment, is saying that this is a waste of time. But also the legacy media is trying to portray the story as if he illegally used the auto pen, or that it's the issue of the use of the auto pen. So much so that NBC put out a story and it gave it all this this fancy headline and everything like that. It's literally one of these center stories. And it says, lead investigator in Biden's use of an auto pen sign letters with a digital signature. And they're talking about Comer. What they're trying to say here is that, well, Comer's like a hypocrite because he uses the auto pen, and now he's trying to prosecute the president, or he's trying to investigate the president, I should say, for the use of the auto pen. And they even did a major story on it where they had it as the focus of one of their news reports. I'm going to play a little snippet of it here for you.
An unexpected new twist in the investigation into former President Biden's use of the auto pen. Let's bring in NBC News Chief Capitol Hill correspondent Ryan Nobles. What's going on there?
Well, Chris, NBC News conducted an analysis of the communications that the chair of the House Oversight Committee, James Comer, has used to bring in former members of the Biden White House to ask them questions about Biden's use of the auto pen and his cognitive decline in office. And what we discovered is that of the 16 letters that Comer sent to these staffers, that they were all signed with the use of a digital signature, meaning that he did not actually sign these documents himself, similar to what he's accusing President Biden of not doing. Now, what he did do was use a wet signature, as it's called, for the actual subpoena requests for two Biden officials, including the White House physician Kevin O'Connor. But everything else was used with a digital signature. Now, that's not to say any of that is out of bounds. In fact, it's pretty common practice, not only in Congress, but in the executive branch, to use digital signatures or signatures that are not necessarily by the hand of the official who is signing them. But it is the crux of this investigation that the Oversight Committee is conducting, that somehow Biden's use of an auto pen or a signature that was not by his own hand thereby makes whatever he signed be invalid. And what we discussed.
Okay, so that is literally inaccurate reporting.
Correct.
Well, we can. That is literally not what is happening. So everybody understands. It's not about.
Can we not use the word wet signature, by the way? I don't know why that bothered me. It really did. If we could never say wet signature again, I'd be happy. Right? Am I right?
I did not have the reaction that you had to it. I didn't have. Oh my gosh. That was so okay. But just so everybody understands, it's not the issue of the use of the auto pen. The issue
although
is.
It should be. There should be legislation around that.
Well, and I think there should be, like I've mentioned before, there's no requirements of a chain of evidence when it comes.
Yeah. Or there's no guardrails
when
at
it
all.
Comes. Yeah. There's no guardrails. It's like literally, I can tell you verbally, yeah, go ahead and have that sign, and then there's no documentation to prove that I approve that. Right. And that's the issue, is that we don't know who instructed the use of the auto pen. So it's not the use of the auto pen. It's about who instructed the use of the auto pen. Was it the president? And I think that's a fair question to ask, considering the cognitive decline that we were all seeing firsthand. Yeah. So Bernal said no. Of course, more people are pled the fifth. More people are going to be coming up. We'll see if Jill Biden makes an appearance. And NBC is doing its best to, I don't know what they're doing. Like, this is really embarrassing and poor reporting. And they did, if you go and you look at the article, they did like a full analysis. It was a big production. It's where they're like doing graphics of pointing things out and giving dates. And we're like, bro, that's not what we're talking about here.
No, I know. But they're trying to just, they're gaslighting. They're trying to like pivot people's talking points about the whole thing. It's just.
Yeah. Like, this is not the subject at all. So I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping us up. But I have to tell you one thing, because I don't know if you know it. And if you don't know it, I feel like the news of it is really going to set you off.
Okay. Ready, go.
Okay. So did you know that there are plans to host a UFC fight on the White House lawn next year for the birthday, like the part of the 250 anniversary celebrations?
Nope. I could get a front row ticket offered to me, and I would decline out of principle. No.
Did you know about that, though?
No. What? You would have heard about it if I had known.
Look,
if I had known, I would have
no
sent
idea.
You a text by now.
No.
I oppose this. If I was running a campaign right now for anything, this would be the topic that I would run on. Don't do this. No. No.
But yeah,
where are they going to do it? They're going to set up a ring and everything with like the girls in the bikinis with the numbers telling us what round we're in.
I don't know if that. Well, actually, Dana White was asked about this on Barstool Sports, and this is what he had to say about it.
So I'm up at my house, like every year, in Maine at 4th of July, and I had texted with him 3 or 4 times that day, and he never told me he was announcing it. And then all of a sudden, my phone just starts blowing up, and then I start blowing Lene up, and but yeah, we're all going. But we had already done, you know, all the logistics. My team went out there and walked it. We're putting together the renderings. They should be done in the next 10 days. And then we're going to fly out to the White House and present it to him, see what he likes and what he doesn't like, and start working on it. And Ivanka is in the middle of this too. So, we will, this is a sphere, one of one unique event that will never happen again. And I will blow the doors off this thing. I'm going to make this one of the greatest events of all time.
And are you thinking a full card, like full prelims, full main card, or just like a couple fights?
Nope. It'll be a full card, and it will be the best card we've ever done to date.
Rachel's dying inside.
Wow. And we're talking on the lawn of the White House?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as of right now, it's set to be on the South Lawn.
No.
You know, he said we can move it over somewhere else for more people.
Yes, move it somewhere
else. I don't care
if
5 people show up to this thing. I want to be on the lawn. At the White House,
right? That's you care more about that than the attendance. If it's a one-off,
yep.
No,
that's great.
No, I just cannot tell you how much I do not like this idea. Sorry,
I was scrolling yesterday, and I'm like, is this for real? Is this really happening? And I have to save this for. I didn't even send it to you because I wanted the cold reaction for today.
Like, why? What? No, I'm sorry. I have to think about this. I have to pray about it. I don't know. I don't like it.
You have to put
that the plans are thwarted, that there is not a full card of men fighting on the lawn of the people's house. No, I rebuke this. You want to know what else I rebuke? The fact that the UK government just lowered the voting age 16. What? Why would they do that? I'm sorry. I just think it's horrible. Really? I just saw it on the Twitters. Let me confirm. Hold, please. I'm going to look right now. Because if they did, goodbye. I mean, they're already in decline. But here, let's look right here. Yeah, voting age to be lowered to 16 by next general election. They're going to allow 16-year-olds to vote. And it was headed
I think we should be raising the voting age at this point.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, you need to be paying taxes and have had a job for a year. And you need to be able to, like, I don't know, read and write. Has unveiled plans to lower the voting age from 18 to 16. Keir Starmer announced this for the next general election, saying it would be the biggest change to UK democracy in a generation. Well, you're darn right. They're going to
Yeah, well, that's definitely going to make a significant shift. Over.
Don't get any ideas, America.
Yeah,
just
no.
Don't do that. Don't do the fighting on the lawn. Don't do any of these things.
I will admit, I do not. My knee-jerk reaction is like, I don't like this idea.
See, I've rubbed off on you.
Well, and I think, I mean, because I just don't think that's the venue. And I really don't think
it all starts with the hats in the Oval Office, and then it descends into fighting on the lawn and girls in bikinis. And
I also don't understand what a UFC fight has to do with the 250th birthday of America.
Nothing.
Like, that's my bigger issue.
Nothing. Have a pie eating contest. But I might not even really like that on the lawn. Like, just don't do it there.
It would make more sense.
I think it would
make more sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode because I've already traumatized Rachel. So thank you so much for hanging out with us. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. We are so glad that you're here. Make sure that you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. Also, if you would like to support us and get our episodes ad-free, please consider becoming a paying supporter on our Substack. The link is in the show notes. You also get a bonus episode once a month, which we'll have one out, I believe, next weekend, where we do an unfiltered episode and we just, you know, share our feelings and talk about the subjects that we haven't been able to hit on in this insane news cycle. That's it. That's all we have. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.